I think we've all realized that what's going on now is not just a moment in reaction to a tragedy, but a movement towards equity and equality across the spectrum. Over the last 10 days, across social media, you've seen arts and cultural institutions called out for the way that their white-dominated culture has minimized, underpaid, and ignored voices and the works of people of color. Last week, the black squares we saw across Instagram started as an effort to call the music industry to account for its attitude towards race, and it led to discussions of, okay, that's nice, but what's next? We've seen reporters and staffers of color at media outlets that include Bon Appetit and the New York Times and other newsrooms share their stories of being silenced on Twitter and even in assignments. And it's happening in academia with the hashtag Black in the Ivory. In theater, there's an open letter called We See You, American Theater, that's gotten more than 8,000 unique views on its website and a petition that has more than 69,000 signatures as of this morning. Each time, there have been calls for the gatekeepers to examine how their industry culture has not recognized people of color or the value of the work. And publishing is no exception. If you were on Twitter earlier this week, you may have noticed a hashtag that was circulating called Publishing Paid Me. The hashtag was created by Tochi Oyabuche and L.L. McKinney, two black young adult fiction authors, after seeing publishing houses make statements in support of Black Lives Matter after years of paying authors of color small advances for their books. Oyabuche tweeted, "Publishing houses, y'all BLM statements are cute, but I'ma need the same energy when we start talking black writers and book advances. If y'all think the receipts are bad now, it's about to be CVS on this website, and y'all don't want that." McKinney followed up with a, "Do y'all need a hashtag? Hashtag publishing paid me. There you go." It spread quickly, and soon authors like Roxane Gay and Jessamine Ward were revealing what they had been paid for books that went on to become bestsellers and award winners, and it wasn't a lot. Joining me now to discuss what hashtag publishing paid me has revealed about the publishing industry is Lisa Lucas, the first woman and first African-American to become the executive director of the National Book Foundation, whose annual awards are one of publishing's top prizes. Lisa, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me.
So just for people who aren't familiar with publishing, what does an advance signify? And are they important indicators of how authors are perceived?
You know, I mean, the advance structure is really, you know, kind of a prepayment against the work, right? You're going to be publishing a piece of work, either whether it's done or not. And it's a prepayment on the royalties that you're going to get and how many it's going to sell. And I feel like it's really important to me. And I should say just up top, I am neither writer nor publisher. So it's an interesting place to be in talking about this whole situation, because it's like, it's not actually the work that I do, but I work around all the publishers and I work around all the writers. And so what an advance signifies to me is actually important, because you see the level of investment that a publishing house is putting into an author. You see, you know, what they predict, what the value of that work is to them. You know, it's an investment in sort of a prediction into what's going to happen with that particular book. And it can mean a lot of different things. So they are quite important. I mean, they're not the only important thing. And I think that that's important for us to remember as we look at the publishing paid me hashtag, that there are all sorts of different economic, marketing, editorial factors that go into the conversation that is being had and that needs to be had. And it's not just about the advances. You know, I think one of the conversations that's come up quite a lot is like, right, this number that you get, if you get paid less than your book will earn and you earn out, you'll start getting royalties. So it's not always a matter of, I didn't get any money for this book. If your book sells a ton and you had a low advance, you're still going to make royalties on the other side.
It's interesting because you talked about the level of investment. What does that mean in publishing when a publisher really invests in an author? What does that look like practically?
Right. And I think that that's not always like super transparent from the advances in and of themselves. I think that it's important to think about building audiences, right? I think some of the disparities that we saw right in the advanced levels during publishing paid me, which continues on, is that a publisher might say, oh, you know, here's this author, you know, they've got a great network, they can probably sell the book, but we don't know, so let's give a little bit of money. And there's no risk, really, right? There's no risk involved. Meanwhile, you have an author who's untested, you know, that you love the work, and then, you know, you put a bunch of money into it saying, we think that this is going to be a big thing, and we're going to put our backing behind it. I'm talking about particularly like debuts. And I think that, you know, you want to see people saying, I can make you an audience. I can make you successful. And we feel confident in that. And it's worth using our resources to actually put our weight behind something that we believe in. And I think you see a lot less of that when it comes to Black authors and writers of color. And it's not, you know, it's such a complicated thing, even mm-hmm. for me to sort of wrap my head around. I'm not making deals. But you sort of see that there's no system, right? Except that the system isn't fair. Which is why I think there are so many calls for transparency.
I'm curious what you thought when you saw the hashtag publishing paid me. What did you think about this?
You know, I thought, how could a situation be so bad that people are forced to take it to the digital streets, right? Mm-hmm. And have to talk about their money in public. Things that they're probably ashamed of, things that they're probably upset by. And across the board, I mean, it's like when a situation becomes so bleak that people are willing to put their economic situation into the world publicly for all to sort of parse, react to, that's really a desperate situation. And then that was what I thought. I thought, my God, you know, this feels so unfair that people are willing to lay it all on the line. You know, and I don't think that there was a small amount of risk involved in people talking about these things, because it's like everybody can see who the editor is, who the publisher mm-hmm. is, who the publishing house is, you know, without it being said inside of a tweet, you know? And I think that that's a scary place in a, you know, in an industry where there is a disparity of power. You know, I feel my own complications in sort of talking about, you know, this situation. Am I the right person to be speaking about it? I'm not sure. You know, again, which I've said several times already, I'm not the person making the deals. I'm not inside of a publishing house. I work at a nonprofit that supports readers, right? That makes sure that we connect audiences to great books. But it all works together, you know, and it just was a painful moment, you know, to see how much people have been, you know, not respected, you know, not included, discounted, you know, paid in an unfair and imbalanced way, to the point where this painful reckoning is happening.
My guess is Lisa.
And people, it's not something I would necessarily get on the radio and talk about, you know, but it's just that bad.
My guest, Lisa Lucas, president of the National Book Foundation. You know, you've been really active on Twitter this week, and in many ways.
Really, you know, this whole moment, whether we're talking about, you know, the danger that Black bodies experience every day, you know, or we're talking about our jobs and our economics, it really was a moment where it's just, you just have to say the truth. You know, we live in this moment where all of these things have been happening. We know what's happening with the police. We know what's happening in our corporations, with our money, you know, with our art. Right. We know. And at every turn for all of my life, you know, you've been told it's not true. You know, or, you know, it's only kind of true, or it's going to get fixed mm-hmm. and nothing ever happens. And so my own particular reason for being very vocal is just that what happens if we don't? What happens if we don't use this moment to actually try to finally find some equity in every single portion of our lives?
Some of the figures that were exposed are really kind of jaw-dropping. Roxane Gay revealed she was paid $15,000 for Bad Feminist, which went on to become a New York Times bestseller, and then $100,000 for her next book, Hunger. And I was listening to a live Q&A with her this morning at the New York Times, and a woman of color author asked, or someone who wanted to be an author said, you know, what should I ask for? What would you wish you had known about? And she said she wished she had known about asking for performance bonuses. Because even mm-hmm. though you don't necessarily get paid that much up front, you could get paid later on. And I'm curious, you know, I know you're not in the industry, but is that kind of information well known? Or do you need to be plugged into the right kind of agent who's plugged into the right kind of place to know those kind of things?
Right. I mean, the question, again, as a person who does not have an agent, but, you know, who knows a lot of agents and works mm-hmm. with a lot of agents, it seems that the levels of failure for Black writers is across the board, right? Like, where is our representation? Who is advocating for us? Who is educating the community about the kinds of performance bonuses you might get? How to negotiate your royalty structure? How to make sure that your advance is appropriate, right? You know, there are people who are paid, you know, a percentage of your work, your earnings, to do that work. And where have they been? you know, which is not to implicate every single agent or every mm-hmm. single publisher or every single everyone, but where is the consistency in making sure that there's equity in information, that there's equity in representation, and that there's equity in publication, and then there's equity in marketing and all of that? I mean, it's just, it really is every bit of the system. You know, I mean, I think even on the award side, that's been a very complex and painful reckoning that I think everyone who's an awards maker has been going through for years now.
That was my next set of questions. My guest is Lisa Lucas, Executive Director of the National Book Foundation. We're talking about equity and equality within publishing. Describe a little bit of for us what the awards mean, what impact they have on an author's future, and on how much they might get paid.
Well, I've learned a lot about what it does and doesn't matter, which has been really demoralizing from a nonprofit award-making side, right? Like to see an article in the New York Times with Jesmyn Ward standing at the podium at the National Book Awards with the subhead referencing the National Book Award in, you know, discussion of how little she was compensated for a deal is very painful. One hopes, right, that we are purely about excellence. And I think that, you know, as we've built, you know, very diverse panels, brilliant panels, you know, maintained, you know, as much transparency as we can, you know, thought about diversity, thought about access, thought about who we're speaking to, right? And just really built something that I think is quite fair. It's, you would hope, right, that we are working outside of the marketplace to help build power inside of it for whoever that is, whether it's, you know, it doesn't mean that it's just for people of color, right? For whoever, a book mm-hmm. that is excellent that might have somehow escaped the sight lines of whomever might see a bump, a new job at an institution or a university, a better advance, you know, more marketing, a sticker on their book, right? That's the hope, that we're actually sort of circumventing the marketplace to sort of say, whether it's, you know, a bestseller or it's not, this is something that we have put our mark of approval on, and that will power how it performs amongst readers and also how it'll be interpreted amongst publishers, librarians, schools, you name it, right? So you want to power a book, right? My hope is that if a book gets a sticker, then people are going to think about it and mm-hmm. its author differently and positively. And what we're seeing, you know, what I saw, which I found very difficult, was that, you know, it might not matter if it's not the right author in terms of their economics.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, it must matter. I mean, and we'll continue to work to make sure that it matters. And I think that we do a lot of work building audiences and really thinking about mm-hmm. young people, creating value around the book, looking at portions of the marketplace that have been long ignored or not built, right? You know, and so you can do that work independently, but you hope that the corporate structure and the independent publication structure that exists around you is working in lockstep with you, you know, to try and find new markets, to try and reach further, faster, better, you know?
My guest, Lisa Lucas, Executive Director of the National Book Foundation. We'll have more of our conversation with Lisa after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Lisa Lucas, Executive Director of the National Book Foundation. We're talking about equality and equity in publishing. And what sparked this conversation was the hashtag Publishing Paid Me, which was circulating on Twitter this week. And originally, you know, the idea was that some white authors would share their advances to provide context. So, for example, Emily St. John Mandel, who was paid $210,000 for her third novel, Station 11, whereas Jesmyn Ward, who you just talked about, tweeted how her agent had to fight for $100,000 for Sing, Unburied Sing after Salvage Bones won the National Book Award. Salvage the Bones, excuse me. You know, it's sort of interesting in this idea that it's not just the money. You know, N.K. Jessamyn, who's a science fiction writer, she says it's all about the marketing as well. And it's about the cover design. So how do those investments influence what the average person sees at their bookstore or at Amazon?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a huge conversation to be had about how our books are marketed beyond what we're paid for them. You know, I mean, it's like everything that we are wearing on our bodies, everything that's in our house, everything that we have in our purse, right? Someone sold that to us. Mm-hmm. Right? Somebody said, I believe that this person could be a consumer of this product. And so I spent the time and the money to try and create that bridge to them buying my product, right? And so if we simply don't believe in the power of the Black reader or the power of the white reader or any reader reading Black books, right, we're not going to bother building that bridge. Mm-hmm. And we've spent so much time thinking about how to create other markets, right? Like, we know that dads are going to buy any thriller, you know, broadly, or we know that, you know, white women are going to buy blah, blah, blah book. And we've figured that out over time, right? Because we've believed that these are our marketplace. We've believed that these are the consumers of our products. And when I see the way that books are marketed, it seems to me like the burden of proof is upon Black authors and not upon the publisher to create the avenues towards an audience. And that seems totally oppositional to the way that other artists are treated, where it's like, we are making an announcement, we are telling you that this is what you should read. Now, none of these, you know, comments are sort of universal or apply to every single thing. But broadly, it does feel like there is a lack of belief in certain audiences. Today we see number one on the bestseller list, nonfiction, Ibram X. Kendi. We see number one on the bestseller list, Britt Bennett, fiction, right? That, to me, is always been possible. But you have to create, and these are extraordinary circumstances, but you still have to create the circumstances for these books to rise up. And that means spending the money on marketing. It means introducing the authors to booksellers. It means doing all of the things that you do for books that you believe in equitably for all different kinds of books. You know, it's like, if you build it, they will come. I mean, that's not probably a great way to do business, but fundamentally, the belief that something will happen often inspires people to create the road there. And I just don't see the road being built and the belief there that allows for a more equitable landscape.
And, you know, there's a lot of a big part about this is about the gatekeepers and even who okays the book. I know that when I was pitching my book, which is about Black history, my first book, I got turned down by 10 publishers. And one small publishing house picked me up, and it was a little tiny advance, but I didn't care because they actually really believed in the book. But they could only do so much because they were a small publishing house. So, you know, it gets to the point that, you know, so much of the publishing industry may not understand the importance of certain stories because it is more than 75% white at this point. That's what the big number that everybody's been quoting. How do we change that number? How does that number change? What is something that fundamentally, that's even a small thing that could be done that would help change the makeup of the publishing industry?
Well, one, you have to incentivize participation. I mean, when everyone, you know, it's an open secret that there's no place for us, right? Culturally, literally, you know, and when you look at the numbers, I disincentivize people wanting to be a part. You know, I think that we talk a lot about all of the other things that are very real, how much we pay, you know, how unaffordable it is to be an intern in New York City, right? All of these things are real. But also, if you are not a community that has built trust within another community, right? Like, it's if you haven't created value around your product in a community, why are people going to want to go work in that community, right? You know, where they know from jump that they may not be heard, where they know from jump that you're not producing, you know, products to scale, you know, that you actually want. And I think that that's an enormous emotional barrier to people saying, I want to grow up and be an editor. I want to grow up and work at a publishing house. And I think that that is so important, that emotional part of it. And it's something that we don't talk a lot about, but it's like when an industry, you know, is participating in exclusion, people don't want to come. And I think that that's a part of it. I think that the other things we know, you know, again, like how difficult it is to be an intern in New York City from elsewhere when you're not getting paid well. You know, there's a real barrier to entry. But I do think that there's an emotional barrier to entry as well. You know, it's like I, you know, when I was young, when I was 21 years old and graduated from college, like I remember sending applications to the Paris Review and to different publishing houses and hearing absolutely nothing. and feeling like, well, I don't know any way to get into this. And so I just gave it up and ended up finding my way back many years later. But it's like, but I think that that can be quite demoralizing when you're, you know, not considered competitive for no real reason. You know, I mean, even when I made the transition from working in film, which is what I did before, into publishing, it was very difficult from the year 2012 until year 2016 to find the kind of employment that I was looking for in publishing. I think I probably would be at a corporate publishing house today had there been a road in for me, had I not been met with so much resistance, that I just sort of stopped looking. And I think that that is a huge problem.
Well, I suggest that you follow Lisa Lucas on Twitter because she's been on fire, and I have a feeling you'll continue to be on fire about this. Lisa Lucas is executive director of the National Book Foundation. Thank you so much for being with us, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
And listen, I do want to let you know, there have been some small signs of change this week. Yesterday, director Ava DuVernay and actor Whoopi Goldberg were elected to the Board of Governors of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, increasing both gender and racial diversity on the board.